Hi, Neil here, and I want to start this episode by trying to describe an emotion, or perhaps an urge or longing is actually the better word here, and it's all triggered by a certain spectacle. Well, with me, at least it is. It's the time of year in Germany when you see a lot of movement in the skies. Well, in this instance, you actually often hear it before you see it. But when they pass over, I can't help but stand and stare and just feel this longing mixed with a little bit of melancholy. The Germans actually have a really good word for it, for the feeling that I'm talking about. It's called Fernweh. It basically describes that yearning to roam wild and free and explore distant, faraway places. But I'm not a wild goose, of course, so why do they affect me like this? And how much do I really know about wild geese anyway? Well, it's not a lot, as I discovered when my colleague Tamsin Walker in Berlin filed this story that you're about to hear. And for those who aren't familiar with the Living Planet podcast feed, it's a naturally connected installment that we've been including in our feed from time to time, partly to give you and us a break from the occasionally rather dense deep dives that we produce, and partly because we want to help you reconnect with some of the amazing natural phenomena that we either take for granted or simply miss out on while rushing through the day. So, let's see whether this episode will change how you feel about wild geese.
There's something about the advent of autumn or fall that seems to heighten the senses to the air around us. It's not only that it fills with the rich scent of earth and flashes of oranges, reds and yellow as turned leaves flutter to the ground, but that it carries on it the sounds of migrating birds. Chief among them, wild geese. By now I know to expect them, yet still their fleeting appearance invariably takes me by surprise. Their mournful honking is faint at first, a kind of shadow sound, like the residue of something heard elsewhere, or something that seems to belong elsewhere, far from the constant rush and rumble of city existence. But as the autumn bows towards the cool hand of winter, and the skies across parts of Europe and North America fill with V formation, setting off in search of a perpetual summer, their collective voice gathers strength. Geese of myriad markings and species deliver departing calls that echo with a sense of an ending. And I love it. Perhaps because I love them, geese, that is. It wasn't always like that. Time was, I found it hard to look beyond both the mucky piles of poop that geese of all stripes can leave in their waddling wake several times an hour, and the angry hissing that sees some people keep the domesticated species as guard animals. I recall such a gaggle kept at the bottom of the hill where I once lived. They'd emerge at the sound of footsteps, as if they'd been waiting for an opportunity to show off their ill-humoured, spiky-billed pleasure. I trod lightly whenever I couldn't avoid going that way, and wrote them off as neither fluffy nor cute, not endearing or even entertaining. Not much at all, really. Just annoying geese. And as such, animals I was categorically not interested in. But as with so many things, attention has been a great teacher. And the more I've taken an interest, the more I've learned both about and from them. They are, it turns out, birds of communal and wise ways. So communal and wise, in fact, that some of their behavioural traits are held up as aspirational in the world of business leadership. In part due to their reputation as social creatures.
I came to this field once in the morning. It was misty, and I could only hear them. But then the mist cleared, and I could see 8,000 geese sitting there.
Gerd Weinmann guides visitors around a wetland reserve not far from the German capital of Berlin, where storks, cranes and geese gather in preparation for their long migration south. He comes often and sees their numbers gradually build over the fall until they suddenly take off. All wings, noise and excitement. I recently experienced that excitement not far from the reserve where Gerd Feynman gives his tours. I initially took it to be thunder rolling towards me. It was like a low growl that seemed to make the air vibrate. But there were no grey clouds, just a dark mass spilling forth from the horizon. It took me a moment to realize it was, in fact, wild geese. Thousands and thousands of birds. So many it seemed the sky might not have space enough to accommodate them. And they flew low enough not only for their raucous honking, but the definitive flap of their outstretched wings to be loudly audible. Some briefly touched down on dry land with a proud shake of their tail feathers, but moments later, they were off again, effortlessly falling back into their countless V formations as they continued their journey to who knows where. It was utterly mesmerizing, one of the most memorable natural spectacles I've ever witnessed. And watching them that day, I get why company execs seeking to encourage teamwork might hold geese up as an example of how to do it. Because part of being social animals is their ability, and moreover their existential need, to act as a group. Since they breed in one part of the world and overwinter in another thousands of miles away, they have to be able to cover seemingly impossible distances. Canada geese, which traditionally spend the warmer months in the northerly reaches of the US before heading to the far south for the winter, can travel as far as 1,000 miles or 1,600 kilometers a day. Other species, such as the great white-fronted goose, clock similarly phenomenal mileage both across Europe and North America. But neither could manage if they didn't band together. The classic V formations we're introduced to as kids in books, movies, and pictures are a visualization of teamwork. Flying this way means the birds behind the goose leading the flock benefit from the uplift it creates as it flaps its wings, thereby saving a third of the energy they'd otherwise have to expend. And because the lead goose has to work the hardest, the adults in the group take turns at the front. So simple, so selfless, so smart. And there's more, because their honks are not emitted to enrich the fall soundscape for city dwellers such as myself, but to communicate and to keep each other on track, and even encourage each other to keep going on what can only be exhausting journeys across the world. But that doesn't explain how these journeys come to pass in the first place, and how it is that these migratory birds know when it's time to leave.
Das ist das, was den Menschen voraus haben.
They are ahead of humans in that regard. They have an instinct, and they can sense the changes in air pressure. There's still a lot of research to be done, but we do already know certain things.
Such as that in the weeks preceding departure, they shed old and grow new, healthy feathers, and eat enough to store energy for the journey ahead. That they fly in family groups when the goslings are just a few months old. That they can feel a bad weather front or frost moving in. And that the older, more experienced animals are the ones who decide when it's time to spread their wings. And therein lies the next mystery. How they navigate from far norths to deep souths without getting lost. Online goose maps are mind-boggling, zigzagging data visualizations of nature in action. Coloured lines stretch across countries and continents, becoming so thick with movement in places that they form dense blocks of red, purple, and yellow. At first glance, these maps might even resemble those published by airlines to promote their route range. But that is where the similarity between our experience of flight and that of migrating geese ends. They have no reclining seats when they get tired, no in-flight entertainment, and nobody serving them the food and drink they need to stay the course. Instead, they must remain alert, their eyes constantly taking in the world below, noting landmarks such as the rivers, coastlines, mountains and cities that guide them on their way and will help them find their way back again come the spring. As for sustenance, they have to land and find it themselves. And all the while, it's also an exercise in teaching. The parents who often mate for life and rear their young together are teaching their fledglings everything they know, so that in years to come, they will be able to pass on the geographical knowledge their own young will need to migrate.
The migration routes are fixed, and they don't really care whether they're flying over towns or anything else. They fly straight over everything, as the wind allows and the direction dictates. It's almost like sailing, where they can't always head directly into the wind, and where sometimes, if there is no other option, they have to tack.
I watched some geese not so much tack through as tackle the wind a few days ago. In the first real cold weather of the season, it blew them about on its invisible tentacles, as if they were as light as leaves. Witnessing one bird in particular pit its own strength against the gusts swirling around it made the long migration ahead seem like a near impossibility. But it also filled me with a sense of awe. Geese may not be the fluffiest, the cutest, or even the most entertaining of animals, but they are so much more. And now, whenever I hear one honking somewhere in the skies above me, I stop, look upwards, and listen. Because that feels like the very least they deserve.
This episode of Living Planet was produced by Tamsin Walker and edited by me, Neil King. Our sound engineer was Gerd Georgi. If this has changed how you feel about wild geese, please do let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Just send us a short voice message to livingplanet@dw.com and you may find yourself on the programme. In the meantime, please do check us out on DW Podcasts on YouTube for bonus material and, if possible, leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening and sharing Living Planet. We'll be back again with a new episode next week. Before you go, I'd like to tell you about another podcast that I think you might enjoy. It's called South Pole, and it's a series that covers the science and human stories of Antarctica. The second season has just been released, and in addition to hearing episodes about ice cores, krill, penguins, and permafrost, the second season will also cover Antarctic musicology, queer explorers, and women's contributions to the continent. South Pole also teaches us just how connected we are to the frozen land and what we must do to protect it. It can be found wherever you get your podcasts.